Hello and welcome to the next edition of the Briefing's Direct Voice of the Customer Podcast Series. I'm Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inter Arbor Solutions, your host and moderator for this ongoing discussion on the latest insights into the confluence of edge computing and artificial intelligence. Our next Intelligent Edge Adoption Benefits discussion focuses on how hospitals are gaining proactive alerts on patients at risk for contracting serious sepsis infections. An all-too-common affliction for patients around the world, sepsis can often be controlled when confronted early. Now, using edge sensors, Wi-Fi data networks, and AI solutions that identify at-risk situations, caregivers at hospitals are rapidly alerted to susceptible patients so they can head off sepsis episodes and reduce serious illness and deaths. Stay with us now as we hear about a cutting-edge use case that puts near-real-time AI to good use by outsmarting a deadly infectious scourge. To learn how, please join me now in welcoming our guests. We're here with Missy Ostendorf, Global Sales and Business Development Practice Manager at Cerner Corporation. Welcome to the show, Missy.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
We're also here with Deirdre Stewart, Senior Director and Nursing Executive at Cerner Europe. Welcome, Deirdre.
Thank you very much.
And we're also here with Rich Bird, Worldwide Industry Marketing Manager for Healthcare and Life Sciences at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you, Dana, and hello, everyone.
Missy, let me start with you. What are some of the major trends driving the need to leverage more technology and process improvements for healthcare? When we look at healthcare, what's driving this need to leverage technology now?
Well, I think that's really an easy question to answer. And across all industries, resources always drive the need for technology and making things more efficient, more cost conservative, if you will. And healthcare is no different. Where we tend to lead slower in healthcare with technology, it's just because we don't have mission critical risk, we have life critical risk. And the sepsis algorithm is a great example of that. If a patient turns septic, they have 4 hours and they can die. So as you can imagine, that clock ticking is a really big deal in healthcare.
And what has changed, Rich, in the nature of the technology that makes it so applicable now to things like this algorithm to intercept sepsis quick?
Sure. I think the pace of the change in technology is something that's quite shocking to hospitals. And that's why they really need the help of two globally recognized organizations such as HP and Cerner to help them address those problems. So when we look at the demand spike across the healthcare system, we can see that people are living longer with complex long-term conditions. And when they come into hospital, they are sometimes at a point in time when they need the most amount of help. What we're looking at doing together is understanding how we can use this connected technology at the bedside to a certain extent where we can integrate the IoT devices that the patients have on them at home. But for the case of this use case, it's really at the hospital. Being able to take all of those at bedside medical devices, traditionally not connected automatically, but through, you know, the humans, the caregivers that are in the system, be able to use the technology, the connected technology, to take readings from all of these devices and be able to analyze those at the speed of the computers on site. So not just relying on the professionalism, the expertise, and the care of the team on the ground, but also helping them with this level of intelligence that can offer them and the patients more confidence in the fact that their care is being looked at from the people on the ground, as well as the technology that's reading all of their life signs and flowing it into the applications that Cerner provide.
Deirdre, I'm wondering what is new and different about technology and even process that's making it easier to consume at that healthcare edge. How are the nurses and other caregivers reacting to these new opportunities, like with the algorithm for sepsis?
It's interesting because I have seen this growing around the world, having spent a number of years in the Middle East and looking at the sepsis algorithm gain traction in countries like Qatar and UAE and Saudi Arabia, and now seeing it sort of like deployed across the European countries in Ireland, in UK. And I think once nurses and our clinicians basically get over that initial feeling of, hang on a second, why is the computer telling me my business? I should know better than this. And once they understand, they have benefited enormously. But it's not just the clinicians that have benefited, Dana. It's the patients. And we have the documented evidence now that we want to stop patients ever getting to the point of having sepsis. And what this algorithm and similar algorithms are doing is alerting the frontline staff earlier, and to allow us to actually prevent patients developing sepsis in the first place. And I think some of the most impressive figures that we have show the reduction in the incidence of sepsis and the increase in the amount of the early SIRS, the early sepsis stages, the severe inflammatory response part, and the increase in the uptake of identification of them. And when that data is fed back to the doctors and fed back to the nurses, they see then and they understand the importance of actual real-time documentation. I remember in the early days of the electronic medical records, the nurses might be inclined to maybe not do such real-time documentation. But when they understand how the algorithms are working within the system to identify anything that is sort of like out of place or out of kilter, from that perspective, it really increases the uptake, the adoption, and the liking of the system and what it can provide for them.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into what this actually does before we look at some of the implications. Missy, what does Cerner's Health or CareAware Connect approach actually do? Let's just describe it so that we can then further unpack it.
Sure. Well, with the St. John's Sepsis Agent, we are really looking for early warning signs so that we can save lives, like we talked about. And there's three pieces to this. There's monitoring, then alerting, and last, the prescribed intervention. So if you think about it, it goes to where Deidre was speaking to, the documentation is being done real time instead of previous practices where a nurse in the ICU might have had a piece of paper in her pocket and she would write down, for instance, those vital signs. And maybe 4 hours later, she'd sit at a computer and she'd put in 4 hours of vitals from every 15 minutes for that patient. Well, as you can imagine, a lot can happen in 4 hours in the ICU. So by having all the information in the electronic medical record, we can now have the sepsis agent algorithm continually monitoring that data. It's going to survey the temperature, the heart rate, the glucose levels, get that out this morning. And as those change and fall outside of the safe parameters, it's going to send alerts to that care team so they can take immediate action. And with that immediate action, they can now change how they're treating that patient. They can give them intravenous antibiotics and fluids, and there's between an 80 and 90% lives saved when you can take that intervention. So we're changing the game by leveraging the data that was already there. We're just taking advantage of it and putting it into the hands of the clinicians so that action can be taken. And that's the most important part. We have to be able to actionize the data.
Now, Rich, this sounds pretty straightforward, but there's a lot going on to make this happen, to make this edge of where the patient exists able to deliver data, capture data, also protect it, make it secure, make it compliant. Tell us a little bit about what's had to come together in order to support what was just described by Missy in terms of this CareAware Connect.
Sure. I agree. Focusing on the outcomes of this is very important. What it delivers to the clinical team, that confidence is always at the front of mind. But to be able to provide that in a way that is secure, real time, and available no matter where the key care team are is something that is very, very important. So that the fact that all of the devices are connected poses great potential opportunities in terms of the next evolution of healthcare technology. So up until now, we've kind of been digitizing the workflows that have always existed. Now, for me, this represents the next evolution of that. It's not only, well, it is taking paper and turn it into digital information, but then how do we get more value from that? Having Wi-Fi connectivity across the whole of a site is not something that's very easy. It's something that we pride ourselves on making simple for our clients. But a key thing that you mentioned was the security around that. When you have everything speaking to everything else, that also introduces the idea of the potential of a bad actor. How do we protect against that? How do we ensure that all of the data is collected, transported, and recorded in a safe way? And if there was a bad actor to become a part of the, you know, as well as the external network, but the internal network, how do we identify that and close it down? And working together with our partners, that's something that we take great pride in doing. Providing that, we talk a lot in trends about mobility and, you know, outside of healthcare and other industries, mobility usually means the ability for people to access things via their smartphones. But within hospitals, of course, that mobility is really around how the clinicians can collect and access the data wherever they are. It's not just, like Missy was saying, not just one workstation in a corner that the care team use every now and again, but it's freeing up that technology for the care team to take with them and give them the confidence to know that the data that they are taking action on is collected correctly, protected correctly, and provided to them in a timely manner.
And Missy, another part of the foundational technology here is that algorithm. How is machine learning and artificial intelligence coming to bear? What is it that allowed you to create that algorithm? And why is that a step further than simple reports or alerts?
This is the most exciting part of what we're doing today at Cerner in healthcare. And while the St. John's sepsis algorithm is saving lives in a very large scale way, so getting most of the attention on a major scale, there are many things that we've been able to do really around the world. Deirdre brought up Ireland, and in 2009, even way back in 2009, one of our clients there, St. James in Dublin, was in the news because they made the decision to take the data and build decision-making questions, so three questions, into the front-end application that the clinicians use to order a CT scan. Unlike other x-rays, CT scans actually provide radiation in a way that's really not great. So we don't want to have a patient unnecessarily go through a CT scan. The more they have, the higher their risks go up. So by implementing these three questions, the computer could look at the trends in why the clinicians thought they needed it, and based on previous patients' experiences, did that CT scan make a difference in how they were diagnosed? And now, with machine learning, it can tell the clinician on the front end, this really isn't necessary for what you're looking for to treat this patient. Clinicians can always override that. They can always call the x-ray department and say, look, here's why I think this one is different. But what they were able to do in Ireland is they were able to lower the number of CT scans that were ordered just because it was easy and a doctor would order the CT, a lipid panel, and whatever the other group of tests that they always automatically ordered. So with machine learning, they're changing behaviors and making their community healthier. That's one example. Another example of where we're using the data and machine learning is with the opioid toolkit. Here in the United States, we announced that in 2018 to help our partners, our healthcare systems, combat the opioid crisis that we're seeing across America. And Deirdre, you could probably speak to the Torrance study a little bit as a clinician, if you want to talk about that a little.
Yes, indeed. Some interesting work done with Torrance Medical in the United States on what they call OIRD, which is opioid-induced respiratory depression. And looking at like approximately one in 200 hospitalized post-operative surgical patients can end up with an opioid-induced ventilatory impairment of sorts. And what this is doing was it results in a large cost in healthcare. In the US alone, it's estimated in 2011 that cost $2 billion. And the Joint Commission has made some recommendations on how the assessment of patients should be personalized. So it's not just one single standardized form with a score that is generated based on questions that are answered. It looks at the patient's age, their demographics, previous conditions, any other history with opioid intake in the previous 24 hours. And according to the risk of the patient, then recommends limiting the amount of opioids they're given. And they look at that then to study it afterwards. So what they were doing was looking at the amount of patients who ended up in respiratory distress and had to have an agent, a drug agent to reverse that distress. And they found that was being administered too many times and it was at too high a cost in relation to patient safety. So now with the algorithm running, they have managed to reduce the amount of patients who end up in respiratory distress and limit the amount of narcotics according to the actual patient, the specific patient. So it's no longer just a generalized rule. It looks at specific patients, alerts, intervenes, and then you can look at the data to get your reports afterwards. The one thing I like about the way our clients worldwide work is the willingness to share this information across the world. And so I've been on calls recently where they've asked, you know, is this something that they would be interested in Europe or the Middle East? So it's not just one hospital doing this and improving their outcomes. It's now something that could be looked at and done worldwide. And it's the same whenever our clients devise a particular outcome that they set out to improve. And we've seen many examples of those around the world.
So again, Dana, it's about not just collecting data, but being able to actualize the data. And we're seeing where that's creating not only great experiences for a partner, but healthier communities.
This seems to be a great example, and I think there's going to be an awful lot more of this, where we get the best of what people can do with their cognitive abilities and their opportunity to contextualize and work across both the tactical and the strategic, and then also the best of the machines to get where they can do automation and orchestration of unfathomable amounts of data. So, Rich, how do you view this interaction, the balancing act between attaining the best of what people can do and machines can do, and how do these medical use cases demonstrate that potential for that?
Dana, I think there's two points I'd like to make. So point number one is it is doing exactly as you just stated. It is helping the clinical teams rather than some, you know, when we think about AI, I'll speak for myself for anyone I say we. When I think about AI, I've grown up in the science fiction world where AI is a threat that's, if it's not taking your life, it's probably going to take your job. But what we want to be clear is we're not replacing doctors or care teams with this technology, we're actually helping them make more informed and better decisions. But a key thing that Missy said was they are still in control of this. We are providing this data to them in a way that helps them improve the outcomes for their patients and reduce the cost of the care that they deliver. So we'll probably talk about the quadruple aims later, but how do we use technology to reduce the amount of money care costs, increase patient outcomes, but also enhance the clinician's professionalism. So point number two, Missy was talking about, you know, adding a few questions into the workflow. So I used to work with a CTO at a hospital that always talked about medicine being eminence-based. So it's based on the individuals that deliver it. And there's, you know, numerous different healthcare systems based on the individuals delivering it. With this digital technology, we can actually offer those questions, just to, you know, just nudge a little bit. Don't just do what you've always done. Let's examine what you have done and see if we can do that a little bit better. And the second point that I would make, you know, the general topic that we're talking about here is digitization. In this context, we're talking about digitizing the analog body's vitals. Any digitization, and again, this is the thing that's most exciting about it when we talk about these kind of topics, any successful digitization of any industry is driven by the users. So we see entertainment industry, that's driven by people choosing Netflix over DVDs from the store. When we start to talk about delivering healthcare via technology within this context, so speaking about what it can do rather than what it is, that's when we start to see healthcare data cannot be shared. It is the most personal data, most valuable data in the world. We cannot share that. But when we can show the value of a data share in a safe way, you know, it's highly regulated, it's still shared in a safe way. But when the clinical teams can see the value that's generated from using the data in this way, then that changes the conversation. It changes the conversation to how much does the technology cost? Two, how much can we save by using this technology? And for me, irrelevant of who I work for or who I work with, that is the really exciting thing about this. Looking at this as a technology that can help people provide better care and help patients be protected while they're in hospital, and in some cases, avoid having to come into the hospital in the first place.
Now, getting back to the sepsis issue as a critical proof point of life-enhancing, life-saving benefits, tell us a little bit, Missy, about the scale here. It's something like 40,000 people a year in the UK alone die from sepsis, that it's one in three in general who die have sepsis, and it's as big a killer as cancer. So let's just revisit sepsis and why this is paying huge dividends in terms of saved lives.
Yeah, it really is. I always point back to the World Health Organization stats, and the most recent release were in 2018. 30 million people worldwide experience a sepsis event. And they really classify that as 6 million of those could lead to deaths. You brought up the UK. The stats in 2018 for the UK were 150,000 annual cases. 44 of those end in death. You can see why this sepsis algorithm is a game changer, not just for a specific client, but for everyone around the world. It gives clinicians the information they need in a timely manner so that they can take immediate action and they can save lives. Rich talked about the resources that we save, the cost that's driven out. All those things are extremely important when you look at healthcare from mine and Rich's point of view. But when you are the patient or the patient's family, that translates into a person who actually gets to go home from the hospital. And you can't put a dollar amount or an efficiency on that. It's truly saving lives. It's amazing to think that we're doing that by simply taking the data that was already being collected, running that St. John's sepsis algorithm against it, and alerting the clinicians so that they can take action.
Missy, can I just jump in here?
Please and do, yes.
Add something that I think it was a really profound moment for me. And after Hamad Medical Corporation in Qatar had run the sepsis algorithm across their hospitals for about 11 months. And then they, you know, they wrote up the paper, they did the data, and they reckoned that they had potentially saved 64 lives. And at the time when I was reading this, I was standing in a clinic there, and I looked out at the clinic. It was a busy clinic. And I reckon there was sort of like 60 to 70 people sitting there. And it just hit me like a bolt of lightning to think that what the sepsis algorithm had done for them could have meant the equivalent of every single person in this room being saved. Or on the flip side, we could have lost every single person in this room. Mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, sons, daughters, brothers, sisters. And it just hit me so forcefully. And I thought, oh my gosh, we have to keep doing this, and we have to do more, and we have to find out where all those different areas are that we can help to make a difference and save lives, save and improve.
We have such a compelling rationale for employing these technologies and processes and getting people and AI to work together well. But in making that precedent, we're also setting up now the opportunity to gather more data on a historic basis. And as we know, the more data, the more opportunity for analysis, the more analysis, the more opportunity for people to use it and leverage it. We get into a virtuous positive adoption cycle. So Rich, once we've established the ability to gather the data, we get a historic base of that data. Where do we go next? Where are some of the opportunities where we can save lives, but now we can improve patient outcomes, patient experience, costs, and economics, which all allow for more money to be driven back into the healthcare process? Tell me a little bit about, now that we've set the precedent, what the potential roadmap is for the future.
Sure. So for me, the exciting thing is, like you say, if we can take every piece of medical history about an individual and provide that in a way that the clinical team can see it from one end of the user's life right up to the present day, we start to think about how we can provide medicine that's more personalized. So treating people for the conditions that they do have. Do we send a patient for a certain type of scan? There's also the side of that, you know, do we give this patient this certain type of medication? When we're in a situation when we've got the whole of the patient's data in front of us, then the clinical teams can make a better decision. Are they on a certain medication already? Are they allergic to a medication that you might prescribe to them? Will their DNA, the combination of their physiology, the condition that they have, if they only have one condition, or the condition that the multiple conditions that they do have, we start to see that better clinical decisions can be made. We can treat people for the conditions that they do have. So the Hewlett-Packard Labs, I was talking with an individual recently who was talking about how big data will revolutionize healthcare. And to the point that I was just making there, so you have certain types of patients with certain conditions that are in a cohort of patients. How can we make better decisions on that cohort of patients with those co-conditions, you know, with a specific time in their life? But then also, how do we do that from an individual level of individuals that have, it all sounds very complicated, but my hope is as we get closer, you know, as the power of computing improves, these insights are going to reveal themselves to the clinical team more so than ever. But then there's also the population health side of that. So rather than just thinking about patients as individuals or cohorts of patients, how can policymakers, governments around the world see the decisions that they do make, you know, in terms of preventative care, in incentivizing populations to take more health maintenance? How can we give visibility into that data into the future so we can make better decisions for populations over the longer period of time? And I think being able to bring all of this data together in a safe way, in a way that protects the security and the anonymity of the patients, but also to be able to provide that to individuals that are making clinical decisions about the people that are in front of them, but then also for policymakers and clinical management teams to be able to look over the whole population and make different and more informed decisions as well, then we see massive potential for what we were suggesting there around the prevention, the reduce of the fact that people are becoming ill, so having an impact on how much healthcare costs before the patient actually needs the treatment that they need. I think it's all very exciting. I don't think it's too far away, but the idea that all of these data points that we are collecting are on the most part in their own silos right now, I think there is still some work to go in terms of interoperability. So everybody's data being able to interact with everybody else's data. And I think Cerner are making some great around the population health element around that as well.
And Missy, to you briefly, where do you see the next on-ramp accelerating benefits happening when we combine edge computing, healthcare, and artificial intelligence?
I honestly believe there are no limits. I think as we continue to take the data in places like in Northern England, where the rural healthcare system is on a peninsula. So they're treating the entire population. Rich spoke to population health management. They're able to look across the data and see how something that affects their population, like diabetes specifically to them, is affecting the community. What's working? when different clinicians work with their patients and treat them? And how do we roll that out across the community so that we can reduce the amount of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and reduce the cost of healthcare and reduce morbidity rate and on and on and on? So that's really the next place where AI is going to make just such a massive impact. It'll no longer be just saving a life with the sepsis algorithm running against those patients who are in the hospital. We'll be changing entire communities and how they approach health and how, as a community, they really fund healthcare initiatives. We'll be able to see more proactive management of health by the community.
Last word to you, Deirdre. What advice would you give to other practitioners to get them understanding the potential and also what it takes to act on that now? What should people in the front lines of caregiving be thinking about how to best utilize and exploit what can be done now with edge computing and artificial intelligence services?
I suppose I would start by saying everybody should have the most basic questions in their heads at all times. How can I make what I am doing better? How can I make what I am doing easier? How can I leverage the wealth of information that is available from people who have walked in my shoes and looked after patients in the same way as I'm looking after them, whether that's in the hospital or at home in the community? How do I access that in an easier fashion, and how do I make sure that I can help to make improvements in it? And so I think it's access to information at your fingertips. It's not having to remember everything. It's, you know, it's like having it there, having it suggested to me, and always going back and reviewing what those results and analytics are to help improve it the next time round. So from bedside to boardroom, everybody should be asking themselves those questions. Have I got access to the information I need, and how can I make things better? What more do I need?
Well, very good. I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there. We've been exploring how hospitals are gaining proactive alerts on patients at risk for contracting life-threatening sepsis infections. But we've also learned the larger picture of how edge computing and artificial intelligence are enabling caregivers around the world to respond to more types of issues and become more intelligent about how they allow healthcare to proceed to better care for people. So please join me in thanking our guests. We've been here with Missy Ostendorf, Global Sales and Business Development Practice Manager at Cerner Corporation. Thank you so much, Missy.
Thank you. It was fun to be here today.
We've also been joined by Deirdre Stewart, Senior Director and Nursing Executive at Cerner Europe. Thank you so much, Deirdre.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And lastly, we've been here with Rich Bird, Worldwide Industry Marketing Manager for Healthcare and Life Sciences at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you.
And also a thank you to our audience for joining us for this Briefings Direct Voice of the Customer, Internet of Things and Artificial Intelligence Strategies interview. I'm Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at InterArbor Solutions, your host for this ongoing series of HPE-sponsored discussions. Thanks again for listening. Please pass this on to your community and do come back next time. Thank you.